This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup, blocked by James! It's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm.
And he got it, young ball continues to wear him out!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rohn. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
Good. Correct me if I'm wrong there. Did you just cut a false start on that intro?
What do you mean, false start?
I think it sucks that we're on audio only for this show, just because you're going to edit that out. But I want people to know what happened.
I honestly don't know what you mean.
Didn't you go, whoop? I heard a little warm-up whoop from you.
Oh, no, that was just my excitement to be back podcasting. We didn't podcast last week because the NBA went on strike, and we'll get to that stuff. I'm still letting everything marinate and listening to a lot of different sources on it. But we have a very special podcast planned here, and I'm excited to finally get to this because I've been dying to ask some questions here. With us today from Bleacher Report, as well as the wonderful Lottery Podcast, also part of the Blue Wire Network, is Jonathan Wasserman. Jonathan, how's it going, man?
I'm doing well. I have a screaming baby in the background. I hope you guys can hear it. And I hope my wife does a good job of keeping him quiet. But I don't know par if you guys are picking him up. What's that?
Par for the course, John. I have an 8-month-old, and her nursery is right next to the office.
I was about to say, we appreciate your time extra because you are currently in the process of moving, and you're also a new father, which congratulations on that. That's incredible.
Yeah, thanks. There's a lot of shit going on all at once. We're at 8 weeks.
So very, very new. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of stress, but all in all, so far, so good.
Well, based on a paltry 8 months of evidence by comparison, I could tell you it gets even more fun. Yeah. I really like it. So hopefully you're having a good time too.
Part of me like wants him to start talking and playing sports, and the other part of me knows to cherish the fact that he can't walk or talk yet.
Dude, we're getting really close to the ambulatory phase, and we're like, she's getting really close to crawling, and my wife and I are like, yeah, come on. And then I turned to my wife, was like, you know, we're rooting to make our lives like five times
exactly.
Harder.
Exactly.
Well, but anyway, Justin can't contribute to this at all.
I really can't. I really can. I'm very self-involved. It's part of my brand. But the good news for you, man, is that this has been a very normal, easy, not stressful draft season, hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no games being played, so how hard can it really be?
Yeah, exactly. One thing I'm really curious about, and I think a great place to start this is, I'd love to know more about your process when you're designing the big boards, because obviously we're kind of in mock draft season. What's kind of your trick to balancing both sourced information as well as your own opinion when you're putting those together?
Yeah, so I don't pretend to be the smartest guy in the room, and I like to, of course, you know, I have my own opinion about everybody, but I talk to a lot of smart people who have pretty big time jobs and whose job is to literally evaluate basketball players for a living. And if they don't do a good job, they don't have that job. There's some guys in the league who I just really value, and I kind of balance my own opinion with what they have to tell me and kind of filter in what I what I value and what I think is right and good ideas and stuff. And so, you know, the big board is, I think people get a little too carried away with the number in front of the player. You know, the difference between 20 and 23 is zero pretty sometimes. And it really comes down to, you know, what team does that guy go to and fit and all that. And I always say, like, I wish I could do the big board after the draft because it would change, you know, based on, like, if I knew Mo Bamba was going to the Orlando Magic, he wouldn't be number five on my board. Right. You know, people get a little carried away with the actual number. It's more about tiers, I think. And every team, honestly, has a different draft board. I kind of do a top 60 board, I guess, you know, in general. But every team, you know, if I were to do a big board for 30 teams, I'd have 30 different big boards with 30 different rankings. So, you know, continue.
I was about to ask, you know, you talk about 30 different rankings for 30 different teams. And I told Justin I had a bone to pick with you, sir, because on a recent article, you wrote best fits for all the top prospects, and the Cavs were not the best fit for anyone. So that,
you know, listen, I'm pretty sure I didn't do. I'm from New York, and I don't think I picked the Knicks. Maybe I did with Obi, but, you know, ideally, if you're a prospect coming out of the draft, and I'm sure we'll talk more about Cleveland, but not exactly an ideal place to get better right now.
No, yeah. Not right now. And they have a really weird roster for a lot of reasons. So I think that is kind of where I do want to take it, jokes aside, is what does the big board for the Cavaliers look like in your opinion? Like, who do you think they should be targeting, and who do you get the sense that they are targeting?
I mean, my personal opinion is they should rank five players, best to worst, with not taking into account fit at all. Mm-hmm. And whoever that guy falls to them, you know, the best guy, take him and ignore position and fit. And, you know, I guess the big question that every Cleveland fan has to ask is just, are we rebuilding or are we competing? And, you know, the Drummond contract, is Darius Garland, you know, a good starting caliber point guard to build with long-term, and what's Sexton's real value? There's just so many questions. Mm-hmm. And I think you just have to worry about stockpiling talent, get the best player available, and figure out how to sort it out later. And so LaMelo Ball has been number one on my board since November. So to me, he should be number one on Cleveland's board.
Yeah.
And you go down the list. Of course, I'm sure Kobe Altman, you know, likes or has some investment in terms of what he's put together already. And my sense is, you know, maybe he does want to have this player fit into what's already on the roster. Mm-hmm. But he also probably has a better idea in terms of, you know, what he wants to do with Drummond long-term and how he feels about Garland. I'm just not really sure about his personal sense of the team.
Yeah. I don't know how you feel about this, Justin, but I do think like the BPA approach, especially for a team like the Cavs, is for me, it isn't always as simple as just take the guy. Because I do think, I'm curious what you think, Jonathan, about potential opportunity cost of trying to split development minutes among all those guards if they were to take another lead ball handler type.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I mean, that would be, and that's the argument against taking LaMelo Ball, is that you kind of, well, if you put, you know, you give the ball to LaMelo, then how does Garland develop? And what does that do with Sexton touches if they have to all split the ball? You know, it's a tough call. I don't really know what the right move is because I wish I had a better feel. You know, I'm curious, I guess, what you guys think of Garland's season. Somebody who I followed, obviously, in high school and whatever, how many full games he played in college. So there's just such a poor sample size of Garland, and they made such a big investment with the number five pick. Mm-hmm. So to just give up on him that fast is tough. You know, of course, I didn't watch every game from his rookie season.
Yeah.
And then the other question is Sexton. Like, another question I could even ask you guys is the narrative started to shift a little bit. You know, he went from like empty stats guy to, okay, now he can really score, but where does he hold the most value? Is he a sixth man? Is he a starting point guard? Is he better off as the two because he can't really get other guys involved? So it's tough to figure out what everybody's value is and where we see their careers going over the next couple of years. At the same time, like if LaMelo Ball is the all-star of this draft, I don't know how you pass on him because of the chance that Darius Garland doesn't get his touches.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess this is a year where it, the teams that are kind of picking high here have a unique advantage where they're going to be holding camps before the draft, where they basically get to see where these guys are at after an offseason, which was one of the reasons why, as we approached the lottery, I started to warm up to, okay, if the Cavs take a look at Garland at the end of September when they have their camp and say, this guy isn't, he still hasn't progressed the way that we thought, because I thought he had nice flashes last season, but if he hasn't looked like, okay, now that he's further removed from his surgery, he has he's a little stronger, a little more confident. If they still wasn't that guy, then absolutely go ahead, take LaMelo Ball. But it doesn't seem like at five that there's a huge possibility of him dropping. At least I'd be surprised. I think if he does, the Cavs would still take him. Everything we've heard from Chris Fedor and other people around the team was that Ball's kind of the top guy on their board. But what I find interesting is I always like, even if it's NBA conversations on stars in the league or when it comes to drafting, I like tiers more than ranks, because I feel like, especially when it comes to drafting, if you are looking at guys that all have about the same ceiling, then you might start to factor in fit, not just with who's currently on the roster, but with organization, who you feel confident you can bring to their ceiling. Because you might have somebody that just doesn't connect with what your front office prioritizes in terms of character, team building, that sort of thing. And I do think that there's some value to kind of being self-aware in what type of prospects you do well with.
Yeah, no, and teams do. They have tiers, and they'll tell you they use best fit as a tiebreaker. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be interesting to see. You know, LaMelo is going to be gone by number five.
Yeah,
I mean, if somebody doesn't trade up for him, I mean, he just won't be there at five. I'm trying to think of like other guys. So other guys that are going to be in Cleveland's area, like Danny Avdija, who is probably, you know, I guess it's hard to say. He's in another tier with a bunch of other guys. And it wouldn't be surprising if they said, okay, he fits too well for us. You know, that gives him the edge over some of those guys. So they definitely take that into account. And then again, there are some teams that brought up that Mo Bamba example from earlier, where like they obviously had Vucevic. There was no room for Bamba to play, but he was clearly the best player on their board. They didn't worry about fit at all. So teams will ignore fit and just take the best guy on their board. And in that case, it backfired. but like, you know, Bam Adebayo was a center. This is when Whiteside was, you know, I guess the narrative on him was a little.
So had some positive stock.
Yeah.
yeah. But they took Whiteside. They took Adebayo knowing that they had the starting center that they were invested in. And guess what? That actually worked out. So, you know, every team has a different mentality, and depending on the draft, they may value fit and take that more into account and more into the equation of their decision.
Man, you just made me think of the parallels between Okongwu, who I'm really, really high on in this draft, Bam with the whole Whiteside and Drummond kind of situation. But immediately after the lottery, it was Fedor that mentioned basically the guys that the Cavs really like, the three that they kind of be anticipating picking from. Obviously anything can change. Someone can drop. Opinions on Wiseman vary, and I know the Cavs are very high on him. But it seems like it's kind of between Denny, Okoro, and Vassell. And out of Okoro and Vassell, Carter and I have kind of gone back and forth on who we feel is the higher ceiling, and the consensus seems to be Okoro, but I'm curious on your thoughts on if you one agree with that, and what to you kind of makes Okoro the higher ceiling player if you do in fact believe that.
Yeah, so I talked to a bunch of scouts in Okoro over the past 2 weeks. One of them had, and actually all of them seemed lower than what the media suggests teams are on Okoro. And basically the idea is that, like, if you're the upside with Okoro is really tied to his intangibles, because he's not really a creator. He's not really a shooter. If you're going to bet on Okoro and you're going to bet on him, you know, being a more than just a role player, you're kind of hoping that he's like a Brogdon type, or, you know, somebody who just impacts games without putting up big stats, or like a Draymond Green type. And so that's that's where the upside is with Okoro. It's not with any of his skills, because offensively, he's pretty limited in terms of what he could do. I kind of compare him to Anunoby, where he's got these like big, powerful legs for defending. That's going to be his bread and butter. And offensively, he's a complimentary guy. I mean, it's hard to see offense running through him. Mm-hmm. Even though he's a good decision maker, he's efficient inside the arc. I think there's a little more excitement with Vassell's game. Obviously, there's a high – I mean, the floor is shooting and defense create that high floor, right? It's like how can Vassell not be a rotational player? But this year he made pretty big improvements, I think, to his shot creation. Some of his shot making that we saw throughout the year was more than just catch and shoot. He had shot 38% on pull-ups, which was a nice improvement. He had some nice fallaways, some nice step-back shots. And, you know, obviously you hope those flashes become more routine. He's 20. There's a lot to like with Vassell. There's a lot to like with Okoro too, but I think he's too far behind offensively for me to feel super comfortable with and calling him maybe the number five pick. I have Vassell ranked like just a smidge above Okoro.
The thing that kind of scares me with Okoro is it does feel like the guys that become that have the label of being really strong perimeter defenders in the draft in their college stats tend to pile up those blocks and steals. Not really. I haven't really seen those numbers, and I'm something of a draft novice. Like, do you kind of anticipate him being an elite defender at the NBA level, or merely a solid one?
Yeah, I think a solid one. I'll tell you what, though, he's got the mindset and the work ethic. You know, he doesn't take it for granted. He doesn't just assume like I'm going to be good defensively because I'm 6'6", 225, and strong. So he's somebody you expect will maximize his potential just based on his reputation off the floor, his character. His defensive numbers aren't crazy, you know, and you know, like DeAndre Hunter last year, everyone kind of thought DeAndre Hunter was going to be like lockdown defender, the guy who guards LeBron. And I think Hunter was a little bit, I think they kind of overestimated what he could do defensively. His numbers were pretty bad. He didn't have any defensive stats at Virginia. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I really try not to put too much stock into defensive stats, but like analytics guys will talk about steal rates and block rates and stuff. You know, I think the safe projections say he's going to be a good defender. I think it might be a little unrealistic to think that he is going to be like lockdown guy who competes for defensive player of the year awards.
Is there a guy, so it seems like Ball, Edwards, and Wiseman are kind of the consensus top three, if there you can call anything a consensus top tier. Is there a guy after that group you think is kind of the clear-cut number four best player available that the Cavs should consider if he is there at five?
I have Okongwu better than Wiseman. I've had that from maybe like the second week of the season.
I do as
Wiseman
well.
Wiseman's he's always stood out in high school because he's 7'1", 240 with a 7'6 wingspan. And, you know, playing against high school kids, it's just dunk city constantly. And then the first two games of college he played against, I don't even remember, no-name schools, and destroyed them, dunking only. And, I mean, Oregon. And Oregon has players. And he kind of – his weaknesses were exposed. He's not – and in today's league, listen, he doesn't shoot. He's not a good passer. And he's not really somebody who's going to ever play power forward or switch. Of course, he's capable in certain instances of moving his feet in space, but he's not going to be like a plus switchable defender. So he's just like kind of like a little bit outdated, and I'm not really buying his skill level. I know there's flashes. If you look at his highlight tapes, he'll bring the ball up on the fast break, and he'll have a fall away from the mid-range. But those are not, like, realistic things to expect from him night in and night out. And he doesn't have that personality of, like, killer instinct. That's always been a knock on Wiseman, too. It's like, he doesn't play with a lot of passion. And people have always questioned his motor. I mean, that's a cliche buzzword when we talk draft. But he just doesn't come off as a high-motor guy. One of those guys I just question is he going to maximize his potential. Okongwu, on the other hand, first of all, I think he's more skilled than he's given credit for. I think people look at him as like a shot blocker and dunker and an energy guy. But he was 94th percentile in post-ups. He shot 15 to 35 in the mid-range, 72% from the free throw line. And he's just his skill level is just better than what people think. And I think some people are saying, oh, he's a post player. But, you know, post players are outdated. But not if you're really good in the post. And I think he's really that good in the post where you can actually give him the ball and he's going to create a high percentage shot with his footwork. He's got a great left hand, and he's pretty hungry in the paint. And so I just see a high floor, but I also see a lot more upside than people might be suggesting.
You could have stopped halfway through and we would have been thrilled. This is a very pro Okongwu podcast. And I think he really would make a lot of sense for the Cavs. You did talk about Denny, and Denny is a really interesting guy from the perspective of he seems like a good fit for a lot of what ails the Cavs. But he also doesn't really have that kind of uber elite trait as far as I can tell. Please correct me if I'm wrong. Again, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I'm just kind of curious what you think about what the chances are that Denny shows up and becomes one of those guys who becomes like something less than a jack of all trades and fails to make an impact anywhere because he's not elite anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's the knock. You know, what's his specialty skill? And I've gone back and forth on him for a long time. And if you watched him in the U20 European Championships when he won MVP, he was the go-to guy. We saw a lot of creation and pull-up threes and stuff. But then you put him against a different level of competition and EuroLeague and even in the Israeli League when he won MVP, it was tough to buy his creation ability. He dribbles kind of high and he's more of a line drive type of player. There's not much creativity to his handle and game. He's a safe play. And I think that's what everybody sees. And in a draft that's so uncertain, the high floor, that's what people value. And that's what I value. And he's staying top 10 for me. I wouldn't put my money that he ever becomes an all-star player. Mm-hmm. But
I'm sorry. Do you think he is a rotation player? Almost certainly. Because I almost worry that he's one of those guys that's like, he's not quite big. He's not quite skilled enough to play a three, but not quite, you know, quick or, you know, he can't hurt fours on the other side. I feel like that's the worry. And a guy like that, I worry, is that Jonas Jerebko? Like, is that his floor? Like, what does he look like to you at the low end?
I mean, like, if I'm thinking like Dario Saric, if he can be a decent rotation player, and I know he's been up and down, but I think he was better than Saric was coming out of Croatia. Their games are different. I mean, I don't want to compare one to the other. But in terms of value and ceilings and stuff, I think he's got the chance to be better than Saric. Maybe a weaker Gallinari. You know, he's not the shooter that Gallo is. He's not definitely not as creative as a scorer. Like a Story lower in terms of his ceiling. Like I think he's got the chance to be a good starter. And I'd say worst case scenario, he's a replaceable starter. But I don't see him being like a guy who is like, you know, ninth guy off the bench and is changing teams every other couple of years.
I find that really interesting. I mean, one of the things for me, I don't really feel like there's any cornerstone offensive guys in this draft. I guess Ball's probably the closest thing to that. But the rest of the guys, I kind of have a tough time figuring out how they're going to fit in. I'm just hoping the Cavs can deliver someone that can contribute on the defensive end. But also, speaking of delivery, we got to get to our sponsors here. And a big shout out to our sponsor, DoorDash. You've counted on restaurants, now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may still be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings the food you're craving right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery too. Just open up the DoorDash app, select your favorite local spot, and your food is on the way. I just ordered Thai food using the promo code BLUEWIRE yesterday. It was delicious. Loved it. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BLUEWIRE. That's $5 off your zero free delivery on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code BLUEWIRE. Don't forget, that's code BLUEWIRE for $5 off your first order with DoorDash.
Fun fact about the that ad read, the Thai food was in the script. Justin's never eaten Thai food. That's not true. Sunday... Sundays are coming back in the NFL with NFL Sunday Ticket.tv. You can stream every live out-of-market NFL game every Sunday afternoon on your favorite devices. Plus, Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels. Never miss your favorite team's favorite players. No matter where you live, NFL Sunday Ticket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sundays ever. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFL Sunday Ticket.tv and use promo code BLUEWIRE. Justin, I'm really glad you go first because a little behind the curtain peel back, I never have the ad reads pulled up, nor do I know where they are when you start.
Carter, I'm fully aware of this. I am 100% aware of this.
I had a really hard time getting to it this time. So thank God the prior win was a bit longer.
Yeah, not as long as the CBD read though. One thing before we move on from Denny, John, I'm really curious, comparing him to Saric, would it be fair to say you kind of view him as more of a four than a three? Like, do you see him as a perimeter player?
I think ideally he's a four. Or not ideally, I think actually ideally he's an oversized three who's a kind of a mismatch. But realistically, he's probably in today's league going to play the four. And listen, he's pretty jacked. I mean, I don't think physicality is going to be a problem with him. He put on a lot of muscle over the past year and he competes. Another reason why I see a high floor guy, he's tough, he's strong, he's competitive, and he's 19. And another guy who just seems hungry from everything I follow off the floor and the guys you talk to. And I think he's a guy who can bang with some bigger guys and then use his quickness to his advantage. And he does have perimeter skills. And I know that people question his free throw numbers, whether they're more indicative of his shooting than, you know, his 3-point numbers, which are better. But I think he's a shot maker, and he can handle the ball on the open floor, and he's got some pick and roll ability, and he's a good passer. I think he could play either forward position. You really just have to kind of play it depending on who he's going up against.
Yeah, and I'm sure who the Cavs currently have on their roster is also going to be a factor when you consider that at the four you have both Kevin Love and Larry Nance Jr., who probably has a good argument for the most impactful Cavs player and one of the younger guys that fits their timeline. With their situation in the four in mind, I believe in your first mock draft immediately after the lottery, you had Obi Toppin going to the Cavs at five. Mm-hmm. Now, that freaked me out a little bit. One, because I hadn't really heard anything connecting him and the team just yet. And as I said, I really prioritize defense in this draft. I think there's a lot of guys that can make an impact on the end. And he doesn't really fit into that category. Can you kind of go into the what your thoughts are on Obi and the potential fit with Cleveland?
Yeah, and I didn't listen. No, I don't have any sources inside Cleveland telling me that they're favoring Obi.
Thank you for saying that, because I feel just a little bit
right. Goal of the podcast accomplished.
Right. This was more of my mindset is Cleveland has to think best available. And again, I don't know what the front office is thinking in terms of, are they going to go after a fit? Are they going to, you know, create a top five board and get their best guy? Toppin is, their scouts who have him number three overall. I think management might kind of, or Altman might feel some pressure to get quicker results. Mm-hmm. And I think Toppin is the type of player who can compete for Rookie of the Year next year. I also think that, and the more I've watched, and I've had more time to watch games this year than I have in any draft I've covered, sometimes I think the defensive concerns are a little bit overblown, kind of the same way they were with DeAndre Ayton. The shot blocking numbers aren't great, but he has the tools and athleticism to make those plays. You know, he's probably never going to be a difference maker, a big plus, but I think he could be average. Mm-hmm. And if he's average and he's averaging 20 and 8, I think the defensive concerns get overblown a bit. So that was my thinking. Of course they need defense, but they also just need talent and somebody that they can bank on to produce. I can't help but think that he wants a guy who does not going to take 4 years to see results. So that's the line of thinking with Toppin.
That's very fair. Does age come into concern when you're discussing what he can bring to the table? Because I feel like it's a little different. Like last year, I felt very strongly that Brandon Clarke should have been a pick kind of in the back end of the top 10. I just felt like he was that polished. And it kind of feels different when you have someone like Clarke that is already very polished on the defensive end and was an effective scorer, even if some of his skills were a little limited on that end. Does someone like Toppin that does still have a decent amount of work ahead of him to round out his game to complement what he can do on offense, does the age kind of come into effect there, or do you still kind of think, hey, these guys are all young enough that they have a lot of growth ahead of them if they put the work in?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the eye of the beholder. Some guys don't care, and we continue to see older players get drafted, and you know, Cam Johnson was 23 when he got picked, and I think he's a decent selection for Phoenix. Devontae Graham was 23 when he got picked. Brogdon was 23. You know, we're seeing guys get better. Yeah, we're seeing guys get better that were seniors. And I think, again, with Toppin and this particular draft, when it's not like you're passing on any obvious stars, I think that there's a level of safety and a level of, like, guaranteed production you're going to get with Toppin. And another guy who just has like a total great reputation off the floor. People are really likable. And unfortunately he can't do in-person interviews, but if he did a Zoom interview with them, I mean, I guarantee you that people are going to forget about his age a little bit. However, if you look at the track record of 22-year-olds who are taking the lottery, and I actually have an article coming out tomorrow on like 5 ways to spot a bust. I think that's what they titled it. Mm-hmm. And like, go look at the track record of 22-year-olds taking them in the lottery. It's pretty scary. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we do see plenty of older guys get better, and maybe teams will be more comfortable now seeing, you know, like Cam Johnson last year being a pretty good pick despite going the lottery 23 years old. And then, by the way, there's the other side where I'm watching Jamal Murray go nuts in the playoffs, and the thought that the Pelicans took 24-year-old Buddy Hield at 6 and Murray went number 7. Yeah, that looks like a big mistake.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's really tough. It's funny that I think it's really interesting that from a more objective perspective, you are more interested in, like, in a draft like this, trying to find a star, like, in taking those shots, because, like, no one's that good anyway. Whereas Justin and I are like, no one's that good anyway. Just give us someone who can play.
Yeah, just give me someone that's safe. You can tell that we're Cavs fans that have been hurt before. We have tried rolling the dice in a not great draft, and we got the Fat Mamba. Of the three, of Denny, Okor, and Vassell, we've talked about kind of what they can bring on the defensive end. I think all of them kind of project to be good defensive players. But the other need that's kind of glaring with the Cavs is playmaking. How would you rank the playmaking ability of those three?
I think Denny has the most playmaking potential of those three. And then Okoro and then Vassell. I mean, the big knock on Vassell is the offense is not going to run through him. I compare him to Mikal Bridges. And Bridges is a good player. But I think for him to be optimized, he needs the right guys around him. And he probably is going to have that in Phoenix with the way, you know, Booker and Ayton are coming along. But Denny is, you know, and if you watch the U20 European Championships, he averaged over 5 assists per game as their, you know, lead initiator, running pick and roll and finding guys and fast breaks. And he's a good passer. I mean, he was a point wing. I mean, that was really like his title before this year. And of course, the offense didn't run through a 19-year-old in EuroLeague, and he still has to work on his handle and get play a little bit lower, but he definitely has some playmaking potential. And Okoro does too. And he was like the perfect example of guys who just in college, they play in these systems and their certain skills get messed. Like Okoro had the ability to attack closeouts and find guys. And he's a good passer. Maybe not somebody you'd call a playmaker, but a very good passer and an unselfish player who can find guys around him and tries to find guys around him. So I'd rank Denny 1 in terms of playmaking, Okoro 2, and Vassell's never going to be a playmaker. You have to know that when you take him, and hopefully you surround him with enough guys who can create.
What do you think Vassell's ceiling is as a scorer? Is it going to be just a spot-up guy and maybe an Ariza-esque, you know, maybe can cut and finish every now and again in transition?
that's the most realistic one. That's a good comparison. Ariza, you know, I think Mikal Bridges is still getting better, so I don't know where his offensive ceiling is going. And then I've heard, like, you know, the really optimistic outcome of, like, Chris Middleton. And Middleton was, you know, not the most advanced scorer coming into the league, and he just got a little bit better each year. And Vassell made a nice jump from his freshman to sophomore year in terms of, you know, creating for himself a little bit. But it's hard to picture, like, a go-to option in the offense. Vassell's going to need a good fit for his game to really take off and get the right guys around him. But if he does, then I think he's got the chance to be a very valuable 3-and-D wing with some, you know, secondary scoring ability.
I feel like he's a fairly natural fit for the Cavs because they really do need length of the three. Like, Jetty Osman, bless his heart. But, I mean, even with the contract extension he got, like, that is the dollar value that you expect from, like, an eighth, ninth man. He mm-hmm. should not be your primary perimeter stopper. Vassell just seems like, for me, the comparison is Otto Porter Jr., who was a guy that I was mm-hmm. actually saying, hey, the Cavs should take this guy first overall because I was a little higher on him, mostly because of his floor. Like, I'm fairly risk averse when it comes to these situations, partly because I understand, okay, the Cavs haven't always had the most stability. So if you're going to roll the dice, it's kind of worthwhile to go that direction. But at the same time, I've kind of talked myself into the possibility of Okoro because they do have a bit of a track record now with Jetty, with Sexton, with Kevin Porter Jr., Larry Nance, even, of developing jump shots. Mm-hmm. How much work does Okoro's shot need? Because it doesn't seem as messed up on the way up. The hitch kind of seems at the top. Is that more correctable than like kind of a swinging motion that you see with like a Michael Kidd-Gilchrist or Mikal Bridges earlier in his career?
Yeah, it's fixable. And what makes it even more fixable is that he's coachable. So it's not, there's no red flags with his shooting. He's just not a very good shooter right now. He's a capable open shot maker. And his numbers have been pretty consistent dating back to high school in terms of percentages at the free throw line and from downtown. You know, put this kid on an NBA team with NBA coaching and his only job is to work on a shot. And so for the one scout, the scout that I talked to said, I think that after 4 years in the league, by the time he's in his early 20s, he could be just like Marcus Smart, who is 34 or 35% or whatever. Not a shooter, but somebody who can catch fire. Definitely a shot maker once his confidence starts pumping. It may never have that shooter label, but somebody who could be threatening enough and you know, giving what else he's able to add.
Meanwhile, Marcus Smart, I think, just opened the fourth quarter of Celtics Raptors with three straight threes. So
there you go. Well, I've heard very optimistic outcomes for him, kind of comparing him to Jaylen Brown. Do you feel like Marcus Smart's a little more down-to-earth projection for him?
Yeah, he reminds me of a forward version of Marcus Smart. Jaylen was a little more advanced as a scorer, and I think he's more explosive. Mm-hmm. I know Okoro has some nice highlights in transition, but I think from standstill position and attacking the rim, Jaylen Brown has him. And he was a little bit tougher of a scorer from all three levels, but not as efficient as Okoro. Okoro just is, you know, he doesn't take bad shots. He doesn't make mistakes. He's such a low-risk type of guy who's never going to hurt. You know, he can have a bad game, and it does not impact your team. That's the type of guy Okoro is. Mm-hmm. You know, Brown, I think, is a little more – offense is going to run through him. He's going to take tougher shots. So I don't think that Okoro's scoring ceiling is as high as Jaylen Brown's. But similar defensively, both smart guys, good locker room guys. And you can't say anything bad about Okoro. It's just a question of, like, how much can you love him?
Gotcha. That makes sense. So we've already got your opinion on Okongwu, which warmed my heart, but also hurt because that was the other thing that came out on lottery night, was that the Cavs aren't as high on Okongwu as a lot of us in Cavs Twitter. So let's say,
hate to see it.
It's tough. Let's say Ball, Edwards, Wiseman, and Okongwu are off the board. But before we get you out of here, what would your pick be if you were Kobe Altman? Who would be your guy that you would select at five with those four off the board?
Oof, tough. I mean, the best player on my board would be Killian Hayes. And then we go back into the conversation of adding another point guard.
A point guard that does not want to go to Cleveland by some reports.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that. Yeah, that would be and why would a point guard want to go to Cleveland? No offense, yep. But it's just like two other ball handlers who they just got. So I understand that.
Plus poor Kevin Love. I mean, he's already been through a team drafting three straight point guards before. I don't think he wants a repeat of that.
And honestly, you know, give the ball to Kevin Porter a little bit more. I'm a big fan of his. I gave him a lottery grade in that draft, so I love that pick. But, you know, it's tough. I know you – I guess I'm higher on Obi than it seems like you guys are. I think he's going to be – I think he's a little bit – the defensive concerns are a little bit overblown. So probably Toppin would be my pick. But if we're going to keep going down the board, you know, Patrick Williams to me is the guy who – from Florida State, he was Vassell's teammate, is the guy who I think, if I were to pick a guy who is not getting enough attention and who 5 years from now we look back and say, whoa, Williams is that, you know, we should have seen it. That's him. I think he fits kind of what Cleveland could use in terms of his versatility at the 3-4 spot. He's tough. He's athletic. He does a little bit of everything. And he's the youngest NCAA player in the draft. So I don't know, again, if we go back to Altman, like, does he want quick results? Is he looking for another long-term project type of guy? But he is the – I'd say he's a bigger home run swing relative to some of the other guys. Just going down the board here, Halliburton's an interesting guy. I mean, I know it's another point guard, but I honestly think he's more of a two guard and somebody who the Cavs would value his particular IQ at both ends of the floor. And spot up shooting, and I think he's somebody who a lot of teams would value those particular strengths, but definitely Cleveland, and somebody who could play with Garland, with Sexton, with Porter. You could just throw him into any lineup. I really don't think it matters, you know, what position you give him.
Well, I think it's important.
Hang on, Carter.
Yeah,
I wanted to wrap up after that question, but then you brought up Patrick Williams, which leads me to one of my more baffling discoveries. What the hell happens to this poor guy on road games? I've never seen splits like this. He shot 55% from the floor and 50% from three at home, but shot 30% from the floor and 10% from three on the road. Did like every opposing team throw things at him? What happened there?
Yeah, no, I think it was just coincidence, honestly.
One of those fluke things, yeah.
It was a little bit fluky, and I'm sure, again, he's really young. And in that Florida State offense, they share the ball a lot. And there's every game, it's a new guy. And I think in that particular offense, you're vulnerable to just losing rhythm. And I think between his age and, yeah, a little bit of a fluky stat there. But, yeah, I wouldn't put too much stock into the splits. But, yeah, I do remember that being a thing. You know, I haven't looked at the splits, but I do remember him struggling a bit on the road. And of course, ACC, I mean, tough to, you're playing against someone every night. He's coming off the bench. He never had like consistent touches in that offense. So I think there are a couple of factors into those splits.
Well, either way, I think ultimately, as before we say goodbye, I think it should be very much noted that if Obi Toppin becomes an all-star, this podcast didn't happen. And, and that we were with you from the start. And as always, we never know what the fuck we're talking about. So thank you so much for coming on.
At least we have some self-awareness. We know where our blind spots are, and there are many, but that's why that's why we bring in the experts. Jonathan, we really, really appreciate it. You guys, support the people that support us. Check out that article on how to spot a bus coming out tomorrow, right?
Yes, coming out tomorrow, I believe. Yes.
So today, when this podcast drops.
As you guys are listening today. To it, go. You know what? If you can multitask, read while you're listening to the podcast. If not, check it out after. Also, check out the Lottery Podcast. New episode just dropped this past Friday. And you can also read Jonathan all the time at Bleacher Report. We really, really do appreciate it. So make sure you support the podcast the same way you support us, which is by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. Plus, if you want to be part of our exclusive Chase Down Discord chat, You can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. Big thanks to all our listeners, all our sponsors, to Jonathan, to Carter. Stay safe out there, guys. And until next time, go Cats. What's up, guys? I am back, just like pro sports. We got a bonus ad read here for our exclusive partners at Bet Online. Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball is back in action, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, Bet Online. Check out all the odds, futures, and prop bets, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champion Robert Horry. See what they have to say on what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.